Welcome to the SCMS Classical Conversation Podcast, recorded in the new Center for Chamber Music during the Seattle Chamber Music Society's 2020 Virtual Summer Festival. I'm Dave Beck from Classical King FM. I hope you enjoy these in-depth conversations with festival musicians. You can find more episodes at seattlechambermusic.org and most podcasting platforms. Please rate and review us wherever you listen. Cellist Ani Aznavourian began playing the instrument at age 3 with one of America's most beloved teachers in the Suzuki method of musical instruction. In part 2 of our podcast from the SCMS Summer 2020 Virtual Festival, Ani talks about how Gilda Barston created an atmosphere of joyful engagement and community among her young students in Chicago. Ani learned through her own experience as a professor of cello that skilled early childhood teachers are the unsung heroes of music education. You've expressed special appreciation for the work of the unsung music teachers in our lives. When we were kind of talking before this conversation, you say we don't always give enough credit to the teachers who kind of quietly shape us and prepare us for the challenges and opportunities. Why is that such an important story for you to tell?
You know, when it struck me, I got a job as an assistant professor, assistant cello professor at University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. And I enjoyed teaching very much, but I would get so frustrated when students would come to their lesson, and some of them just had basic problems, which had they had the right training early on, wouldn't be an issue. And at that age, at 18, in order for them to change some of these habits, which were so ingrained, they'd really, really need to put the time in. They could do it, and many of them did. Mm-hmm. Well, I would say a few of them did. That's the problem. It's like they really had to have that dedication and put in the hours, the practice hours, to fix some of the basic problems. So it really struck me the importance of the early teachers. And it also occurred to me that they do most of the work are the early teachers, and they're not the ones that get the credit. The teachers that get the credit are the ones whose students are off maybe in college going to international competitions and winning mm-hmm. them, and suddenly the teacher gets all this amazing credit. Mm-hmm. But gosh, those early teachers are so important, and they do so much work. I was so fortunate in Chicago to study with Gilda Barston as my first teacher, and she's the mother of Elisa Barston and Amy Barston. Elisa is here in the Seattle Symphony, a wonderful member of the orchestra, incredible violinist. Yeah. So I was lucky to be close to the Barstons, and their mother, Gilda, was just one of the greatest Suzuki cello teachers that we've had in this country.
Yeah, only they've lost her in just the last couple of years.
Yes.
I was going with Chicago in the hopes that maybe that would be your story. Because I've on our Seattle Symphony Spotlight program that we do at King FM, I had Elisa on recently to talk about her mother and the stories she told about her, and what an incredible inspiration and what she did.
Incredible woman.
Tell me more about how she kind of set an example for you of what it means to teach and instill just such a deep love and desire to make
music.
Well,
so much of it I don't really remember. I was 3 years old.
3 years old, right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But she just had the whole Suzuki mindset, the love of the music, and the whole system. She really had dialed down the nurturing part of it, I'd say, too. Not just the repetition and training the ear. She had all that for sure, but it was the nurturing side and the playing together with other students. The repertoire was a huge part mm-hmm. of the repertoire class, where you're playing with the other students in her studio. And you're harmonizing and you're having fun while you're doing it. I mean, that was such a huge part of my upbringing. So she just really had it all dialed in.
Yeah. And you just, this, you know, there can be so many demands on the life of a musician at your level. And, you know, it's so important to tap into that joy, which I think, you know, I'm thinking about, you talk about your story of your father and to find the thing that he really loved to do. Yes. And to approach music with a sense of you know, great joy in what we do is, you know, it's easy to lose track of that for some people. And, it's sad when they do. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes life can take a path that you didn't really, I don't know. Just kind of veers off in a direction that you didn't necessarily, you know, want or you know, who knows.
It makes us, you know, appreciate those folks. That,
exactly.
And then, so you mentioned being the professor there in Champaign-Urbana. Mm-hmm. How much is teaching part of your life now?
I'm not doing very much at the moment. I'm quite busy playing concerts and finding practice time. I have two small kids.
Oh, okay.
So, so any time that I'm not either practicing or on the road with concerts, I just want to be with my kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So this time goes by fast. So for these years, I'm just really enjoying them. They're actually not that small anymore. They're 5 and 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are you creating a place for music in their lives, or how is that?
They take piano lessons, mm-hmm. but I, unlike my mother, I'm a terrible Suzuki mom. And I'm quite ashamed, actually, because after I come back from rehearsal or from practicing, the last thing I feel like doing is practicing with my kids.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I shouldn't say that. But yes, my daughter really enjoys it. So she's more fun to encourage when I need.
Yeah.
My with my son, it's a struggle. A struggle that I'm failing to win.
I sometimes think it skips a generation. I tried to.
I think there might be some of that.
I taught my daughter cello for a while, and I just realized one day it's just going to be best for both of us if you go find.
Exactly.
I'll find a friend of mine to teach you, and we'll both be happier.
Mm-hmm.
What was your path to the Seattle Chamber Music Society? You connected with after Toby during James' leadership era.
Mm-hmm. So, James and I overlapped at Juilliard, so. Mm. We knew each other, you know, fairly well from those days. And I just had known so many people that were coming here. It just kind of was a natural route.
Mm-hmm.
I felt so fortunate to be asked the first time. It was really the place that I wanted to play. Like, if you had asked me 10 years ago, where's one place you'd really like to play in this country? I would have said with the Seattle Chamber Music Society. I really would have.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many friends playing here, and I was dying to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So I was thrilled to be asked for the first time, and still am thrilled every time.
And it's, I get this great litany when I talk to people about coming to Seattle. It's the level of the players, it's the place, it's the food, it's the camaraderie.
Exactly, yeah. And we're getting to know our audience members quite close. I mean, I've really made, you know, become good friends with many of the board members and stayed in their homes. Mm-hmm. It's just such a lovely way to get, feel like you're really part of the inner workings of the organization.
Yeah. Strange circumstances to be taking occupancy of a beautiful new facility, but what are your impressions of this new chamber music center so far?
I mean, the timing of it all, it's kind of a miracle how literally the paint dried and rehearsal started here the next day. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were able to make this happen. And thank you to everyone who's contributed. I know the campaign has been ongoing for some time, and it's incredible that the goals have been met. And so thank you to everyone who supported the Seattle Chamber Music Society and had made this possible for us to do this. I mean, what a thrill for us to be. I mean, it's always a thrill to come here, but particularly now we are appreciating every second of rehearsal, just to play with other breathing human beings right now during this COVID time where musicians are doing so little. And we're just, we couldn't be more deeply appreciative of this opportunity. Yeah. And I think we're savoring every second.
Yeah. 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 And then when things, when the world returns to normal, it's just, you know, down the street to Benaroya Hall. So the location and right in the heart of downtown Seattle here is extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. And then the, it's beautiful. The facilities are, they're beautiful, that they're functional as can be. I mean, there's everything you could possibly need, including a fridge full of leftovers. They feed us very well here. They talk about the COVID-15. I was doing pretty well, I think, until 10 days ago when I came here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Classical Conversation Podcast. The podcast is a co-production of Seattle Chamber Music Society and Classical King FM. Bill Levy is our recording engineer. You can find more episodes at seattlechambermusic.org and most podcasting platforms. Please rate and review us when you listen. The podcast is produced by Nikhil Sarma and Rachel Soprati. To learn more, go to seattlechambermusic.org. I'm Dave Beck.